I just finished recording an episode with Dr. Carlos Garcia, who is a coach, therapist, and a counselor. And the hour went by just like 5 minutes. It felt like I've been talking to him for 5 or 10 minutes, but we actually talked for an hour. So a couple of things. I really enjoyed this conversation because it's also a different kind of an interview that we did this time. It was more, although we always talk about entrepreneurship and mindset and what comes with it, you know, when you want to be a leader and what the qualities are, but this was heavily focused on all these topics. You know, it was less focused on his immigrant story, but more focused on, you know, how do we lead? How do we connect, and how do we show up as a leader and as an entrepreneur, but also how we connect with ourselves, and what is it that is motivating us, and what is it that is driving us to get to our goals, and what should we do in order also to not feel exhausted and burned out as an entrepreneur. So, I hope you guys enjoy. I actually know you will enjoy it as much as I did. Before you tune in, please make sure you hit like, subscribe, and share the show. So in order to support us to get in front of more people and grow our audience, because that's basically how you can support us. We don't run ads. We don't have any sponsors. Everything is bootstrapped. And the only way, or one way, that you can give us the support that we need is by sharing this show with more people that need to hear that. Thank you so much, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Immigrant Entrepreneurs Show, where our mission is to inspire, influence, and impact other immigrant entrepreneurs to follow their dreams and create the future they want. My guest today is Dr. Carlos Garcia. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ali. Thanks for having me. I just want to say I love the work you've been doing. I started seeing some of your content online recently, and I was like, this guy's brilliant. I got to connect with him at some point. And here we are, man. So I'm really excited for our conversation today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your support. And, you know, also giving back to you, really the work you do. I feel this is something that is really needed in this world. And I'm excited for our conversation. And I'm also excited to ask you some questions for selfish reasons, because, you know, there is that. And I also believe there is so much.
Sure.
Not only our audience is going to benefit from this show, but also myself. So
beautiful.
Let's get going.
Yeah.
So before we dive into the entrepreneurial and everything that comes with it, tell us about yourself. And you're obviously an immigrant. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, so I came to the United States in 1980 with my parents and older brother from Cuba. Essentially, we came here as political refugees. My parents were trying to really kind of escape the increasing sort of communism that was taking over in Cuba. And we settled into Miami, Florida. So that's where I sort of grew up. And, you know, my parents really, they kind of just took jobs, you know, where they can provide for me and my brother and my family. And they worked really hard, you know, to sort of get us to be able to go to school and, you know, sort of the very same immigrant story that a lot of us have, right? You know, as I was getting ready to graduate high school, there was this sort of time of uncertainty. I didn't know if I wanted to go to college, what I wanted to do with my life. As we'll talk, you'll see that that's been a thread for me throughout my life. What do I want to do when I grow up? But one of the things that I felt passionate about was sort of repaying the country that gave us the opportunity for freedom. So I joined the military. I was in the United States Marine Corps reserves for 8 years. And then I transitioned out of that into a career as a fireman and a paramedic. And I did that for about 6.5 years before I ended up going back to school to get my doctorate degree in clinical psychology. You know, it was really interesting to have sort of worked and functioned in some of these roles. I think I was just reflecting on this the other day, Ali, but my life essentially has always been one of service, of giving back to my community or to, you know, just the places and people that I feel have been supportive of my ability to get to where I've gotten in life. So, I got through grad school, got my degree in clinical psychology. You know, part of why I went into clinical psychology, we can probably get into a little bit later on as well. But it was really trying to learn how to navigate my own struggles with depression and anxiety from my 20s and 30s. And I saw that here was a tool that really helped me see myself better, understand myself better, get out of my own way, and put me on the path of success, whatever that meant, whether it was in my relationships, in work, professionally, whatever it meant, right? And so I really sort of said, like, wow, this there's a real power to this. I want to be able to do this. I want to be able to learn psychology and human behavior and help people sort of maneuver life in a way that feels more liberating, more free, and more joyous, obviously. So coming out of that, I actually went to, I went chasing money is what I call. I went to do some consulting as an industrial organizational psychologist for a consulting firm. So here I got to work with, you know, organizations, CEOs, on just, again, bringing those principles of psychology into the workplace. And I just loved doing the work. But after about a year or so, I got pretty burnt out. The organization I was working for wasn't really aligned with sort of my values. And then I kind of just went back to Miami to be around family. I just kind of got my doctorate degree under my hand, and I was like, I'm just going to go home, settle in, see where to go next, right? Here I was almost 38, and here I was again in that space of like, what am I going to do with my life, right? And I think that was this really, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll just get down to Miami. I grew up down there. I know a lot of folks. It'll be brilliant. I'll get a job in no time. And life had a different direction for me. It had a dose of humility for me. I wasn't able to find work. I was doing some adjunct teaching, but you know, here I was with this amazing resume, United States Marine, former fireman, a doctorate in psychology, and no doors were opening. Moved in back home with my parents. Was just this year of like deep depression and just feeling absolutely lost and not knowing, like, wait a second, what, here I was on this trajectory of success, what happened, right? I can reflect back on it sort of now knowing that that's just the universe was handing me a time of challenge and difficulty that I needed to learn some deeper things about myself. You know, it actually ended up being a really beautiful time where I got to reconnect with my parents in this very beautiful way and sort of allow those relationships to flourish in a way that probably wouldn't have happened if I wasn't close to them. But, you know, this really interesting thing happened before I moved to Tampa, where I eventually started my own practice and things like that. I was at Enterprise Rent-A-Car for a job interview. And it wasn't for a management position. It wasn't for, you know, anything. It was to wash cars.
Wow.
And so, you know, it was this part of my life that was really humbling that really sort of told me, like, hey, it doesn't matter what you got or what you think you know, you know, be ready for hard, right? Be ready to deal with challenging life circumstances. So anyway, to kind of bring you up to speed, right now I function as a psychologist and a coach. I have my own practice here in Tampa, Florida. You know, I work with people in the mental health space, doing counseling and things like that. But I also embrace this other part of me of working with organizations and CEOs around sort of mindset and how to create impact in the world.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we will get into that, but when I got into entrepreneurship, which was 2001.
Yeah.
Okay. When I started my first company and then 2003, second company. So, you know, I was just doing what was needed. And it was also different kind of, it was more kind of hustling, but I was hustling for myself. And then later down the road, you grow and then you have employees and you have a team that then you realize, hey, these people have also families. So now I have responsibility, not for myself and people around me, but also for the team and their extended family. So here's the thing. The longer I went into this and the more I grew as a person, but also within the businesses that I'm involved, I realized how much entrepreneurship is about mindset. You know, people say all the time, yeah, it's also about skills, and but I do believe majority of being a successful entrepreneur is about mindset. Because if you have the right mindset, you don't have the right skills, you go and, you know, learn the right skills. But if you have the skills and don't have the mindset, you will always get stuck somewhere.
You're full of skills. Great.
Right. So here is my question to you. What is it when you work with people, with entrepreneurs, with CEOs, and they come, so number one question, at what point do they come to you usually? Is it when they get to a point that they're like, oh, I'm not able to handle this any longer myself, I need some support, the pain has gotten that big that they feel like I cannot handle this any longer? Or is it usually they realize it and they like, oh, you know, I get stuck here and there, I need some support, let's go seek some support? Where is it?
Yeah, great question. It's usually the former. It's when they're in crisis. It's when the world is falling around them and they don't know what to do. But one of the interesting things that have happened is that as I've you know, started to do more speaking engagements and gotten out there and started to network more and talk to entrepreneurs more about sort of what they can do for themselves when they discover this sort of method that I use around mindset. They're like, well, wait, why am I going to wait till things are in crisis? Why don't I come and see you now? And so I always tell people, come and see me when you want to versus when you need to, right? But yeah, it's usually when folks are in crisis and things are falling apart, whether at home or in the business or, you know, for them sort of emotionally, right?
So, and then my next question is, you know, when you have a team where you're either a CEO or entrepreneur or own a business, and you come and you're at the low point in your life and you come and ask for guidance and support, it's not like, oh, okay, let's just leave everything aside and take care of myself for the next 6 months, and then we'll go back and take care of the business. No, there's no time for it. You cannot pause everything. You have to keep going. How do you help them to maintain and balance those?
Yeah. I think before I answer that question, Ali, one of the things I'd like to sort of share with the listeners is a little bit about what my approach is, right? And my approach is very founded in sort of this process of going deeply inward, right? We need to bring the unconscious to the conscious, because one of the things we need to understand is that for most of us, by the time we are 9, 10, 11 years old, we have already been so highly conditioned and wired to feel, think, and have certain beliefs and opinions about ourselves and the world in ways that we don't even recognize. Right. And so a lot of us go out into the world as adults with these ingrained belief systems or ideas, again, either about ourselves, others, or the world, and they start to get in our way. But right, we go to a book or we look for strategies, and those strategies aren't helping because they're not getting to the root of what the cause of the problem is. Right. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but essentially what I help people do, and this is where I saw sort of that I had some value in this space, was to use these principles that I was helping people overcome depression, anxiety, PTSD, to the entrepreneur. More directly to your question, yeah, it becomes harder because you need to do two things. You need to help them, give them the tools to figure out like what's going on more deeply for me, how to process that, how to work through that, while also giving them the tools to like, hey, you can't let everything fall apart around you. So it's this sort of two-pronged technique where we're like, we're accessing the deeper stuff, but at the same time, how can I give you tools and strategies to just cope enough to handle the chaos, right? So that it is just manageable until you can get to the other side of where the deeper work is for yourself.
I see. Okay. Here's my objection.
Sure.
And I have been through that. You know, I have done a lot of work. I have done a lot of self-development work. I also consider myself someone who is spiritual, but I'm also very driven by missions and goals and where I want to go to in entrepreneurial concepts. So what I have also learned, being around lots of people that come from the spiritual world, but also around a lot of entrepreneurs, is there are a few things, okay? Number one, spirituality most of the time goes to one extreme. Hey, let's meditate all day long and, you know, let's believe and manifest and do all the things, and then the universe is going to guide you and open up. I have realized you can meditate all day, you can meditate 24/7. If you're not moving, if you're not taking action, nothing is going to change. Zero. Nothing is going to change. Okay? That's number one. Number two, I have also realized when it comes to money, which I believe is a great tool, is an amazing tool, is a beautiful tool, a lot of people from the spiritual world that are very self-reflected have a unhealthy relationship with money. Mm-hmm. Money is bad, money is evil. One cannot go with, you're either spiritual or money-driven. Yeah. So tell me about that. How do you see that?
Yeah. So I think some of the things that you are speaking to there, Ali, it's about perception. See, if at your core, you are somebody that is deeply fearful of taking risks, you may develop a story, a narrative, a belief that you feed to yourself that leans into spirituality because it's more comfortable to do so. That if I just step back and let things happen, they will happen. Now, that has nothing to do with whether there is truth to stepping back and allowing things to happen or not. It is more deeply rooted in your perception of what that is. The same thing with money. This is all founded on our earlier sort of beliefs. And so let me share a story. I think this will help sort of the listeners really understand where I'm coming from. So here's a child, and this child is going to eat with their parents. They go out to eat, let's say, every Friday. And on this particular Friday, the parents say to the child, "We're going to let you choose what you want to eat today." So the child gets very excited. "I can finally make some decisions of my own." They get to the restaurant. The child opens the menu and sees this big, delicious, cheesy pizza. And the child says, "I want the pizza." And the mother wants to sort of just check in as, "Honey, are you sure? Why don't you get the burger? That's what you normally get." So the child stops and thinks about it for a moment. But the child sticks to their decision. "No, the pizza." And then, you know, some moms can just, they're very motherly. They're very instinctual. "Honey, are you sure? What if you don't like the pizza?" So the child stops and thinks about it one more time. But they stick to their guns. "No, the pizza." And then the other parent chimes in. "We're not getting the pizza. It's too big. You're not going to eat it all. It's going to be a waste of money." The child says, "Okay, I'll get the burger." Now, Ali, in the grand scheme of things, nothing significant has transpired there. Most of us can reflect back to some interaction that was very similar to that in our childhood. But my question to you in this moment is, what do you think that that child now believes about their ability to make decisions based on that interaction?
They probably think whatever they decide, it's not going to happen. So why would they follow their desires and needs and wants?
That might be one. The child might think, oh, maybe my decisions are no good. Maybe I don't make good decisions. Maybe I need to check with other people before I make decisions. Now, you can say to me, challenge me, what are the chances that that child had that conscious adult thought in that moment? Maybe not, but they sensed something. They felt something. And what we also know about parenting is that it's pretty consistent over time. So that child probably received similar messages around academics, sports, and probably most other things that they did, how they dressed, right? Just very loving parents. This isn't even, right? This isn't even let's pretend now that this child leaves home at the age of 18, but they've been hearing this message from probably around the time they start to have conscious thought, 2.5, 3, to the time of 18. That's a good 15 years of a ingrained, subtle, nuanced message about their ability to make choices. Do you imagine over time this child might start to develop this sort of second guessing of their own thoughts, opinions, choices?
100%.
Inevitably, right? Because the environment has conditioned them and wired to feel and think that way. Now, do you imagine as this child gets older and is making career choices, is making choices about partners to choose, that this is going to impact their self-esteem?
Absolutely.
Their sense of confidence in the world?
Absolutely.
The kind of choices that they make, the kind of friends that they align with.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So all of us have been in some way wired or conditioned. This is what I was talking about earlier. But this person is the kind of person that will come into my office feeling deeply challenged with anxiety or inability to make decisions or perfectionism or something like that and say, why are we exploring my past? There's nothing to see there. My parents were great. I love them very much. There was no trauma. Right. But there was these critical moments, these critical events, these things that unfolded in our past that wired us in a way that we aren't aware of. It's in our unconscious. So let's take this same child and now answer your question from before. If this is a child that's absolutely terrified about making decisions because what happens then for them is that they go into their mind and, right, paralysis by analysis and overthinking and overanalyzing. Oh, I've heard that meditation, you just sort of allow things to happen and they come to you. That child is probably going to deeply align to that spiritually because it functions for them. It has nothing to do with whether there's truth to sometimes meditating and being more quiet on the inside reveals the path. They're separate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can think also from the kind of relationship that this child or now adult may have with money, right? So that's what I'm sort of getting at is I help people discover what is in their story, what is in their past that may have in some form or fashion developed into a way of viewing themselves in the world that is now not helpful for them. There's probably a lot of ways in which it's super helpful. Great, let's keep those. But in what ways is it not helpful, and how can we take a look at that and make a change there?
Awesome. I'm getting super excited because that's that we're going somewhere that I really love. Okay.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Now, here is the thing. You have those that have been through whatever they have been, right? I lost my father when I was 11. I had to leave my home country due to war, come to Switzerland. I was sent back to you. So lots of things going on, right? But here's the thing. Some people will use what they've been through as an excuse to not get to their full potential.
Sure.
And then there are other people that have been in worse situations, in much worse situations, and have done way better than the other people because they did not use it as an excuse, but they used it as a fuel to just go after whatever they wanted to reach their full potential.
I hear that. I hear that line of thinking. And I've heard it a lot, you know, throughout the years. And I think we need to be mindful here because it's a very if you give me those two people and you put them in my office, right? Let's take those two sort of opposing mm-hmm. individuals, mm-hmm. and we start to understand all of their history. We may discover that there are actually other things that happened, other factors at play that may have led one in one direction and one in the other. And the reason that I want to be mindful here is because oftentimes I think people feel that when we get stuck in life, whether psychologically or emotionally, that somehow we want to be there. And it's easy to perceive as an outsider, well, like, come on, why aren't you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps? Come on, look at my past. I was able to do it. But what that does is it deeply discredits the multifaceted ways in which we come into the world. For example, we all come into the world with different temperaments, right? And you can see this from the early development of a child. Some are just more bold and like, you know, I was fascinated. My son, who's you know, only 19 months, he's about to be two. We were at the park this week and he was climbing this thing. And I was like, oh man, this like no, just no fear, just ready to get out there. Other children are sort of slow to warm, right? They're like, I need to assess my environment first. I want to make sure that it feels safe, right? So we need to take into account that we all come into the world with a sort of certain programming. The other thing we need to understand is like what happened in the first couple of years for us, right? And there's a beautiful, his name is Gabor Mate, and he talks a lot about trauma, and he talks a lot about, you know, the ways that our early experiences impact us later in life. And he shares this beautiful story about when he was older, he's going to see his mother at the hospital, and he's already an older man. And he had just had knee surgery. So he was limping a bit because it was just had happened the week prior. But he noticed that when he went into the hospital room to see his mother, he stopped limping. And then after he left, he started limping again. And he got really curious about that. And what that eventually led to was some research that he was doing, like, oh, why did I do that? And it essentially what we do sometimes as human beings is we minimize our own needs in order to ensure that the needs of others are being met. Now, if we take this to an early sort of childhood level, what their research found is that babies, even before 1 year, or like before they turn 1 year old, will sense if the mother, the primary caregiver, the thing that ensures its survival, is feeling in distress. So what he did was he went back and did some research around children and mothers' relationships around the time of Nazi Germany and, you know, mothers that were in high levels of distress and how those children ended up being. Well, what he found was that a lot of those children ended up being like very hyper independent, because what does the child do in order to ensure its survival? It doesn't manifest its needs. Because it puts too much stress on the mother, right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So that's brilliant. That to me helps me understand like, wow, even from our earliest time, there's a thing about us that is assessing the environment, how much stress or chaos is in it, and what we need to do in order to survive in that chaos. So, you know, it could be, coming back to your example, that somebody had some really hard life situations, but their environment also had some places of support, a loving mother, a brother, right? That made it feel somewhat tolerable or manageable to our psyche or nervous system, where another person might have had a couple of, you know, maybe I don't like to sort of compare traumas, but like slightly less chaotic or significant trauma. but if you look at the sort of the years of their life, maybe there was a lot of moving, maybe there was a lot of uncertainty, and so that wires the nervous system as well. We feel more afraid. So all of these things really can impact. So I think we just need to be mindful before we compare two people of like, why was this person be able to be successful and why not? Now, that being said, that's for understanding. We also have a lot of research to look at around post-traumatic growth. So have you heard of post-traumatic growth?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people haven't. A lot of people are familiar with post-traumatic stress. What happened many years ago as we were starting to have more and more soldiers come back from combat, we were realizing that some of them were, you know, obviously being impacted in very negative ways psychologically and emotionally because of the trauma they had been exposed to, post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. But what they started to notice was that there were some soldiers that were in the same units exposed to the same combat and the same traumas who actually came back and started to strive. And so we got really curious about this and like, oh, what is this about? And so, you know, there's a lot of research out there on resilience and what that means. Now, I will say this. Because I, too, am spiritual like you, I believe that it's not so much about the timing of the hard things that happen to us or the number of hard things that happen to us. I believe we're all on our own timeline to work through and navigate those things, right? And so I've seen people be stuck for 5 or 6 years and then launch in a way that no one could ever expect. And I've seen other people who just take the hits little by little and keep building and, right? And so for me, it's not about comparing any of those. It's about how can we use the hard things of life to develop ourselves, right? Because here's the thing, Ali, and you can probably sort of deeply agree with this, but like, it doesn't matter where you grew up, doesn't matter what your childhood experiences were. If you are human, you're going to deal with hard at some point in life. It might catch you in your 50s. It might catch you when you're 5. But inevitably, we're all going to deal with pain, struggle, shame, guilt, sadness, someone stabbing us in the back, someone leaving us. We're gonna have those pitfalls, right? And so how do we use that as material to continue to build ourselves up? And I think what happens for a lot of people is it's in the perception, it's in the narrative. And I think we should take a moment, you know, we'll stop here, but I think we should take a moment to talk about the way that society and the world sort of constructs this narrative about who we're supposed to be in the world that actually keeps us more stuck than actually we keep ourselves stuck.
I love that. And you know, when you said hard, yeah, I also believe that most of things are hard. You know, being overweight is hard, but going to the gym is also hard. Now, which one do you want? Right. You know, do you want to sign up for being overweight, or do you want to sign up for the heart that you go lift heavy at the gym and being fit?
Absolutely.
Both of them are hard.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like
choose your heart, right? Being in a relationship is hard. Being single is hard. Choose your heart. I totally agree with you.
Absolutely. You know, living in an apartment with a 3, 4, 5 kids family, small tiny apartment is hard.
Yeah.
But also going to work and working on weekends and working on at night, and it's hard too.
Right.
Which one do you want?
Right.
You know.
Totally.
And if it was easy, I was talking to my wife today, and I was like, hey, we were discussing about entrepreneurship, but also I don't like generalizing, but I see that unfortunately it's a common path that the younger generation likes to take. You know, we don't like go to the office to work because it's easier to work from home and all these things that you know about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, hey, I believe that they should be also incentivized, those that go to the office, those that go to the go the extra mile, those that are willing to do whatever it takes to go over and beyond.
Sure.
Because hey, even between the employees. And I said, hey, if everything was, and I see that happening in Europe, unfortunately, a lot, that, you know, oh, you should get that, you should get that. As an employee, you should have a safety net. You say, covered by others, not by yourself, you know? Yeah. And I also see that going to a direction which is not healthy because, hey, guess what? If I'm an entrepreneur, if I'm taking the biggest risk in the business, but the employee that is working for me and is off on weekends and at nights and has 4 weeks vacation and is getting the same rewards as I do, have I lost my mind to do what I do? Right. Why should I do it?
Right. You know? I think that's brilliant, man. I think that, you know, we're seeing such a magnificent shift in sort of the workplace across the globe, right? You know, a lot of people think that it was a shift that just happened because of COVID. I think it's been a shift that's been happening for some time. And it's inevitable, right? You know, if you just sort of look at, again, what's happening in our society and in the culture that often drives what tends to happen from this sort of very generational perspective, right? Like my parents didn't have the time, if you will, or energy to go and figure out their unconscious. Right. They were too busy putting food on the table so that we could survive. Right. They didn't have the luxury of the luxuries I have. And so I honor that. Right. Like they were trying to learn the language. They were trying to make a little bit of money so that we can get through the week. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those sort of societal parameters and generational parameters very much influence how we're showing up in the world and what's needed and things like that. We have to acknowledge that we are living in an age where things are just easier and we've been conditioned, right? I've been talking a lot about childhood conditioning, but the conditioning doesn't stop. It's happening right now. As you and I speak, this is going out into the airwaves and somebody's listening to it and it's changing, it's shifting the way they think about the world, right? So that's all present and there. My thing is like, let's make sure that the messages that we're getting out there are ones of understanding, compassion, and love, you know, energies that can help lift us and guide us versus, you know, separation and polarity and hatred, right? Mm-hmm. Because the conditioning is always going to be happening. And I think we just live in a time and age where, you know, it's like, here's a perfect example. Like, you now get food delivered to your house and you don't have to have a social interaction with anyone, right? Mm. Like to some people that's like, of course, I don't want to talk to the pizza person or the, right? But like back in the day, no, you had a few minutes of a chat. Hey, how's your day going? You know, and you left them a tip and there was this interaction and we're just moving away from that. We're so much more disconnected, even though we think we're more connected, right? But, you know, to speak to what you were saying there, I had a parent call me really frustrated yesterday because I'm seeing their younger child and they're like, I just don't know what to do with this child. I need a session with you just so you can help me understand what they're going through. And what I heard in the frustration is, and what I hear often from any parent or executive or anything like that, the reason the frustration is arising for us is because there is an incongruency in between reality, what's happening, and our expectation. And when those things, when there's a gap in there, right? My child should be doing X, but the child is doing Y, then the frustration, probably not for the child, but more so for me as the parent. So, I know this starts to get a little bit blurry when we're talking about a high-powered CEO who needs to run a company full of a lot of people. You may not have the ability, obviously, or the capacity to treat each person like a child. But I think that what I want to sort of share here is like, how do we develop more understanding? How do we back off from our own frustration to say like, what is coming up for me? Why is this energy, this resistance energy arising for me? How can I go inward and find out why that is? Because this also happens in our romantic relationships, right? A lot of people, and I think this sort of speaks to what you're talking about. In today's day and age, it's so easily to point fingers at, like, you made me feel this way. You triggered me. Mm-hmm. You did this, you did that. No one does that to us. People don't trigger us. Things within us get triggered, and then we project that outward. Again, why for me it's so important to understand what's happening under the hood in the unconscious. If I grew up in a home where none of my feelings, thoughts were ever validated, listened to, heard, acknowledged, I'm going to show up in the world later as an adult with a really strong need for people to hear me. Think about how many CEOs you know that function from that place. They don't give a shit about what employees or partners or whatever. It's like, no, my ego needs to bash through the door and come on in. To me, as a psychologist, that's simple. I understand where that comes from, right? Yeah, there are personality factors and different things, but I think it's for all of us, the more we can get in touch with and to the root of, why do I show up in the world this way? Now we can not only have a better understanding of ourselves, right? But now we can have a better understanding of others. Oh, this person has this opinion this way, probably because something has transpired in their life. Why don't I take a moment to get to know them a little bit more instead of being reactive to what they're saying to me, instead of taking what they're saying to me as a getting defensive or seeing it as a jab at me. Oh, that's actually not about me at all. That's all about you. Why don't I take the time to learn about why you show up in the world in that way so we can come to common ground?
Absolutely, 100% agreed with that. But how do I do that as a leader? How do I understand others and still lead them without, you know, having the team going all different directions and still follow the guidelines and lead them as a leader?
I know that this is probably not right, for all of those listening that are very execution focused, type A, give me a strategy. This is not the answer you're going to want to hear. I'll give you that answer in a moment, but you continue to do the work on yourself. And that's one thing I have learned through my life as a leader, in all of the roles that I play as a father. If I continue to look at me, continue to look in the mirror, why do I get aggravated? Why do I get frustrated? Why do I show up with love? What are the different aspects of me, and how do they play in interaction with everything in the world? Now I have a playbook. Now I have a manual that helps me understand that most of the time, if I'm pissed off or frustrated, that is my problem, not somebody else's. What that also allows me to do, because we've been talking about mindset, but I truly believe this to be a thing, Ali, is heart set. Those of us that better know how to regulate and manage our emotional states become the best leaders. And I don't just mean within a company, I mean in the world. We become better husbands, fathers, sons, wives, all of it. But we can't do that if we're not first looking in the mirror to see, how can I change? How can I evolve? From that place, when you're centered in that place, when you know that you're showing up to interactions with understanding, compassion, kindness, ready to work through a thing, now you have the ability to break down the sort of formula. Oh, well, this is an employee that's deeply disgruntled because, you know, he's been kicked out of the last three jobs, and you know, I could either help guide them a little bit further and say, hey, let me put my, probably don't want to put our arm around the shoulder. That could be seen very differently in today's day and age. But, analytically speaking, or metaphorically speaking, let me bring you in and see how I can help you. So when I'm coming to help you from a place that isn't aggravated or defensive, you quiet down in you. And you don't feel fear, or you don't feel like you need to justify anything, because there's nothing for you to justify here. So now we're aligned. And what I can tell you is, from my work as a therapist, I've had so many people come in with all of the stories, my friend, all of the traumas, the no traumas, the harsh parent, the kind, all of the versions. And the one consistent thing, that allows them to finally move in the direction that they want to move is being heard, not being judged, and given being given the sort of hope, if you will, the respect that they might not have gotten in some other place in their life. When you do that, people then start to see themselves differently. Now you become the mirror in which they can see themselves more accurately and say, oh shit, yeah, I am showing up with a lot of defensiveness here. That isn't necessary. That's actually getting in my way. And they start to create the change within themselves. Hmm. We don't change other people. We create environments for them in which they want to change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, when I was younger, I would say young as a leader, I wanted always my team to fear me because that was my style of leadership. Yeah. You know, I would never, when I was not around, I would never tell them where I was when I would come back. And guess what? When I would come back, they would all tell each other, hey, Ali's here, watch out, you know? And you know what? I was proud of that.
Sure.
I was proud of that. Hey, they fear me. They fear the boss, you know? They have to do the work. They fear me because they know they have to do the work, you know? And that was my leadership style until I learned, hey, this can only work for as long as I'm always hands-on and I always put them under pressure in one way or another, you know? And it's also heavy, man. It's a lot of weight to carry on yourself.
Yeah. And I would say it can be. And as long as that's the storyline that we carry about it, it's going to be. And I'll sort of share a story about what I mean. You know, as a therapist, you know, a lot of people tell me that, Carlos, how do you sit in that room and just hear all of this heavy stuff all day? Like, you have to be exhausted at the end of the day. And for many years I was, because what was the storyline I would tell me? Oh, I'm doing really hard work and I'm carrying all of this heavy stuff. So how the heck do you think I felt at the end of the day? But when I started to shift that, when I started to realize, like, oh, I'm not carrying anybody's heavy stuff. I'm just walking alongside them on their journey as a guide. And so I'm just a vehicle of love and compassion, just kind of helping guide you, helping bringing you back to inward, to yourself, to the answers that you have within you. Then it was like, well, if I'm not carrying the story that this is heavy, it stopped being heavy. Now I leave work at the end of the day and I got plenty of energy. So again, mindset, right? We have to be so careful of the stories that we not only tell ourselves, but reinforce every day in the world, right? And look, I get it, right? I'm not living in some fantasy world. I know that life is hard. But I also say to people, like, if you get up every day ready to fight, if you get up every day and leave your house with a shield and a sword, what do you think you're going to find at? Right? Versus if you get up every day and are ready to sort of, you know, express love and give love and compassion and understanding, you're going to get something very different. Because that energy that's flowing in these different directions really, really makes an impact. Another thing I want to say there, Ali, is like, you know, you asked me this sort of question, like, how do we do this? Well, it's very dependent on the situation, right? And I know that we're talking here in sort of generalities, but every situation and every person really deserves a more sort of ample microscopic view to the problem. What's happening here? Who are the people involved? And you know, to better dissect what is at the core. And I will also say that there are times probably in different places in which fear is a great teacher, right? And, you know, I've worked a lot with veterans and military folks. And, you know, there are times when a mission is so critical that there isn't a place for, let's talk about how you feel. That's true and real. And I get that, right? It's mission critical. We have an objective that we need to execute on. But I always think that there's some value in then coming back, which is like debriefing, right? Or pre-briefing, or like those conversations are highly important as well.
Okay. One thing that I have seen and also experienced myself is, as we both know, entrepreneurship is not easy. Okay. But you also need to have some sorts of a huge driver in yourself to push through all the challenges and all the obstacles and all the lows and emotions that come with entrepreneurship. Now, at the same time, you also somehow want to be rooted and grounded, right? Because it's a whole different experience when you're pushing through while being rooted and grounded, or when you're just pushing through and feeling exhausted at everything. They might both get to the same goal or same result, right? But one is exhausting you and the other one is a way better feeling and experience. So how do we do that? Or how do entrepreneurs do that while pushing through as an entrepreneur without exhausting themselves and, you know, being rooted and somehow,
So, I think my life is a perfect example of this, Ali. So I'll speak to that from a very personal place. And again, I want to sort of just, I'm going to talk because there's so many things that go into this, right? I'm going to start by using this quote. And I don't know who the author of the quote is, but laziness is a reaction to the demands for success.
Mm.
None of us come into the world lazy. You ever seen a child learning how to walk? They fall a thousand times, they'll fall. Mm. But they'll keep getting back up and trying. As with a lot of things, when you're a child, the curiosity, the desire for learning is so deeply ingrained into us by the time we are born. Mm-hmm. We come into the world with a hunger for knowledge, growth, evolvement. Why do we become lazy? We become lazy because of the demands for success. So if you think of a child when they first come into the world, they're loved, they're adored, right? They're receiving what's called unconditional love. They feel valued just for being who they are. But for most of us, in our parents' service of socializing us and developing us, they started to give us a framework very early on in our childhood about how we needed to be. And if you did what mom and dad or mom and mom or dad and dad wanted you to do, you got praise. You got reinforced. You were made to feel good. You felt a value of worth. But if you did some of these things over here that they didn't want you to do, or they were too frustrated to have you do, or whatever the case may be, you also got a very strong message of reinforcement that the withdrawal of love, the rolling of the eyes, the chastising, a punishment. So you learned very early on where to go and feel of most value or worth. Now, most of us got put into school around the age of 5 or 6. Kids these days sometimes start preschool or, you know, whatever, ages 2 or 3. We're put into these environments where we're constantly told to be better than everybody else, to compare ourselves. So what started happening for a lot of us is early on in our environment, we started to receive a message from parents, teachers, society, that our worth lies in what we can achieve and how fast we accomplish things. And then school and life just kept repeating that message over time. The kid that comes home with 5 A's and a B, right? What does this B about? Right? We continued in the service of, don't get me wrong, parents weren't off here. In the service of, I'm going to build them up to be strong because the world is not a soft and kind place. But we don't recognize that the child perceives the world differently. What the child starts to hear is, oh, like no matter how much effort I'm giving you, it's never enough. It's never enough. And what do you think it's never enough converts to eventually? I'm not enough. Because that's how children see the world, through this egotistical lens. right? It's there in their world. So now we've developed this feeling of I'm not enough. And the best way to soothe that narrative or feeling is by doing more. So I am a product of that. I am a product of growing up in a home where the only thing that was sort of tolerable most of the time was just, right, good behavior, perfection, so forth and so on. The Marine Corps further heightened that. I mean, I did well in the Marine Corps because of, but it further heightened that. The more I push myself, the harder I go, the right? And I was halfway through my doctorate degree when I realized I was overweight, deeply anxious, full of stress, unhealthy, depressed. When I realized, oh, getting this degree, that little piece of paper up there, is not going to fulfill that thing in me either. Ali, last year we spent, I think, $13.2 or $13.8 billion on self-help. Books, seminars, right? All of this stuff. A couple of years ago, I went to a Tony Robbins seminar and he asked this audience of 16,000 people, who in here has ever felt not good enough? Practically everyone raised their hands. So my question is, why have we been so ingrained and conditioned to feel that our worth lies in what we achieve? I think that for a lot of us, that's what's driving our success, is that somewhere down the road, I'm finally going to make it or have enough money or have that house or have the lifestyle that's finally going to make me feel seen and accomplished or whatever the validation is. And so a lot of us have been driven, myself for many years, from this place of, I got to get out there. I got to wake up earlier. I got to go later. I got to. And what I can tell you now is, when I put that aside and stepped into it, and here comes full circle, the spirituality, when I started to trust that God or the universe or Buddha or whoever I believe in has put everything in the road already for me to walk the path I'm supposed to walk in this life, the stress went away. The pounds started to go away. I started to function from a place of more clarity. I started to function from a place of like, oh, that didn't come to be, must not be for me. I must not have been meant to walk through that door. There's plenty of doors down the road with ease, with comfort, with centeredness, with groundedness. And I can tell you, maybe I'm just data point one, but for my own life, I am now a better leader, a better father. I'm healthier because I can now align. I don't have to feed into that old narrative that something down the road is finally going to bring my validation. I have worth here in this moment. I've always had worth. We all are trying to be so unique, and we don't realize we came into the world so unique. And every single thing that has happened in our lives, the loss of a father, the loss of a mother, the father that drank, the suicide of a friend, all of those things are making us exceptionally unique in our own world, which means now we have something that we can provide to the rest of the world that is no one else can. Like, no one else can say the story that you have to say the way you can say it.
That's so beautiful, man. And, you know, entrepreneurs or immigrant entrepreneurs oftentimes seek status, seek, acknowledgement. I want other people to see me. I want to be seen because I was an outsider when I came to this country. Now I go do whatever it takes and more. Yeah. To have this kind of status so everybody can see that I became something. I became someone, you know? That's why I believe on immigrant entrepreneurs. So some of it comes, you know, because of survival and I need to provide for myself and my family. But a big portion of it comes because we go to a new country and we are considered outsiders, foreigners, and now we want to prove them that, hey, I'm like you, I'm worthy, you know? I can also do the things that you do.
Yeah, and it's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It just is. It's perfect, right? Like, those were the drivers for us. Great. But what do we want to do with it now? Because that was the one fearful thing for me. The place from which I think a lot of where I live is, I didn't want to keep going at that rate for another 20 or 30 years to arrive at some place and be like, oh, it's not here. Because it was a mindset problem. It was a heart set problem. And so when I fixed that, when I went inward and fixed that, now life feels easy, man. It feels so much easier.
Because I imagine the worst thing you can do or experience as an entrepreneur is to get where you thought you wanted to get to and then see, oh, yeah, that's not what I expected to be. You know, I have had guests on the show. They had 9-figure exits, and they were like, when I exited my company, I realized it was never about the money. But I only found out when I got there that it was never about the money.
So that, like, yeah, exactly. So that's perfect too, right? That was what was meant for that person. But I think that beautifully said, and I think the message in all of this is like, let's take the time to understand ourselves fully. And then from that place decide, yeah, I still want to go after the 9-figure exit. Great, go. But you're doing it from a place of consciousness, awareness, not being driven by some fear or some conditioned state of mind, right? And that's a totally different path to travel.
And man, I'm being completely honest and vulnerable. I'm no exception to this. Sometimes I tell myself, hey, what if I the thing that I'm working on doesn't work out? Am I going to be judged? Am I going to be judged by people around me, by friends and family, and maybe those that know me a little bit? And then I'm like, hold on. Yeah. And if they do judge me, so what? You know?
When? Because people aren't going to judge you, right? Like, it doesn't matter what you do in the world. Doesn't matter how perfect of a human you are. Someone's going to have an opinion. And again, remember what we said earlier. It's more a projection of them than it is of you. It's because that's the way they've come to see people in the world. But yeah, people are going to judge you. But what you're saying there is like, you can find the place within yourself that is, and it's not even confidence. It's like, no, I have worth. I'm good. Like, a failure doesn't define me. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in a place now where my business can fail. You know, no one can ever call me for another speaking gig, another appointment, another podcast, and I'll fade off into the distance. Like, cool. I'm going to more time to meditate. Great. You know, I love it.
And do you know what the good thing is about having failures? You're like, okay, nothing happened. I didn't die. No one else died. It was actually in my mind, it was way worse than it really is.
Usually, you know? That's the case.
So, man, it feels like we've been talking for like few minutes, but it's been an hour. that's how much I enjoyed this conversation, and I know our audience does. So, I want to respect your time. I promise you not to go over an hour. We are at an hour and 2 minutes, so I'm going to stop right here. But one last question before I let you go. Where do you, or what advice do you have for entrepreneurs that feel like, hey, you know, the pushing through part and the challenges, overcoming the challenges and obstacles and everything, it's something that is part of being an entrepreneur. But how do I define that it is something that is part of being an entrepreneur, or is it part of something that is not aligned with who I am and what I should do and what my mission is, and I should let go of. Am I making sense?
Yeah. You know, I think I want to answer that from two different places. I'll answer it from the spiritual place. And from that place, it's easy. Everything that's in front of you is for you. You're struggling, that's for you. You're failing, that's for you. It's all lessons, it's all teachings. So don't worry about it. Whichever way you decide to go, you're going to get just what you need. From the other place, a more psychological stance, if you keep seeing these patterns coming into existence, getting in your way, whether it's an internal struggle or an outside struggle, get curious. Get curious. Find a coach, a mentor, a pastor, a counselor, a therapist, whatever you need, but get curious about why you function in that way. And you will stumble upon a treasure of things that will help guide you along your path, not just professionally, but in all aspects of it.
That's beautiful. Dr. Carlos, thank you. So you have no idea how much I enjoyed this interview. You have no idea. Absolutely serious.
Likewise. I hope to keep connecting in the future as well.
100%. There is so much we can do and we will do for this community. I'm going to talk to you about it more in detail. But I enjoyed this conversation, as I said, a couple of times. Really, a lot. And thank you again for coming on at this early time of the day. And let's have you on back soon. Oh, by the way, before you go, please tell us, tell our audience where they can find you.
You can find me on social media, Dr. Carlos A. Garcia. A is for Alberto. You can go to our website if you're here in the Tampa area, tampacounselingandwellness.com. If you're looking for coaching or counseling of any kind, or know anybody that needs that, and then I'm sort of working on some new developments. I'm sort of pivoting myself here a little bit as an entrepreneur. So soon you'll be able to find me on drcarlos.com. So I was able to secure that sort of domain, and there's going to be some really great things coming across through there. So, but I need a couple of months on that. Yeah.
Beautiful. And we will link you up in the show notes so people can find your website and reach out to you. Once again, it was a huge pleasure talking to you and having this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And God bless.